Thornton, Dr. Mark Thornton. He is a senior fellow at the Ludwig von Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama, who defeated Missouri in football, I might say. That is Auburn University.
I was going to say, Ludwig von Mises has a football team? That's kind of interesting.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Mark, thank you for joining us today. How have you been?
John, Merlin, I've been great. It's good to see you guys. Good to hear you. And it's great to be back on Power Trading Radio.
Well, I just have one question for you before we get started. If Missouri plays Auburn this year, how many points are you going to give me?
I'll give you some points.
Okay, thank you. I'll take them.
You guys, does Mises have a football team? Just want to clarify that here.
No, we do not have a football team, but we're right across the street from Auburn University, which has one of the better football teams in the nation, in the SEC.
Yeah.
We went to the national championship game last year. We won the championship in 2010. The fans are, fortunately today, this weekend we don't have a game, which means that I'll be able to get out of the parking lot and get home after the show. Otherwise, the place is a madhouse.
Yeah. Do you get season tickets? I'd imagine being that close. Like, I would be – it's like I'm just not going to drive home today. I'm going to go to the game. It sounds like a great time.
Well, it is a great time. It's a great time just to be around the fans and all the excitement, War Eagle and the whole nine yards. I don't have season tickets anymore. I just go to a game or two, watch the rest on TV. We also have a great season of basketball to look forward to. We've got a new coach, and we will be playing Missouri in SEC basketball.
Great. You can give me some points for that game, too.
All right.
Okay. We wanted to talk about what we call seven transformational trends that seem to be emerging, which could be extremely bullish for America versus the rest of the world. And let's just kind of take these one at a time. The first one, Mark, is the energy renaissance that's going on in America. There seems to be an indication that we could become, in a very near future, all things being equal, a net exporter of energy because of the fracking boom. And, of course, here we have a political administration that has done nothing to stimulate the production of energy, but yet the free market has come along in its own innovative way, as it usually does, and come up with this new technology around fracking. And what do you think about the energy renaissance in America?
Well, I've been seeing it coming for quite a long time. High prices is what drives entrepreneurs to go out there and find new sources of energy, and that's exactly what they've done. So that the price of natural gas, which a few years ago was heading towards $15, is now down to about $4 and change
in the U.S.
I expect the price of oil to also decrease in the future.
And that's in the U.S.
That's right.
Because that is not the price of natural gas in Western Europe or in Asia right now.
That's right, because of the difficulties in transporting natural gas. There is a big price differential between here in the U.S. and elsewhere, but I also expect entrepreneurs to come in and fill that void and find some way to inexpensively condense natural gas and to be able to ship it long distances. Or, you know, one of the things that's happening right here in the South is that they're building this huge fertilizer plant, and they're going to be using that cheap natural gas to produce fertilizer, which natural gas is the main component, and then they're going to export the fertilizer. So, in effect, they're going to be exporting the natural gas.
That's what I would like to see happen. I'd like us to take that cheap natural gas, not export it as an input material or as a raw energy source, but take it, make something out of it, put a margin into whatever we're going to manufacture that's energy intense, and export that product. That's what I'd like to see us do. And I think that's exactly what Entrepreneurial America will figure out how to do.
The only downside I see in this, John, is that we're not actually going after the cheapest forms of energy out there. This fracking business is expensive, and shale oil is expensive, and there's a lot of other sources of energy that we could easily get our hands on. We know it's there. It's easy to access, but the government is preventing businesses from going out there and exploiting those inexpensive forms of gas, which would be even and oil, which would be even better. And of course, they're putting the stoppage on coal. And of course, coal is very inexpensive. We have almost an unlimited supply. There'll be new sources of energy by the time we ever run out of coal in this country, but we're not able to access it because of the government.
Well, that leads us to energy trend number two. Assuming we do have stable energy production, not shipping our energy money over to countries that, shall we say, are not friendly to us, but that could lead to a renaissance in manufacturing, especially in energy-intensive industries, don't you think, Mark?
Well, absolutely, and I think you're seeing this. And what we have to remember in terms of manufacturing is that the amount of labor relative to capital in manufacturing has been declining for a very long time and will continue to decline over time. But that's really just in the Americans' comparative advantage that we develop manufacturing that is capital intensive, that uses lots of robots and computers and sensors to make more valuable, more expensive products. And so, you know, manufacturing's never really fallen off. It's employment in manufacturing. But if we keep our eye on the ball and realize that capital goods, robotics, technology, and energy is really the key to manufacturing in the future, I think you're going to have a better, proper perspective on manufacturing and what companies are going to be able to, that are going to prosper and do extremely well manufacturing right here in the United States.
Absolutely. You know, I want to go back. Sorry, John, I know you want to jump on there, but I want to go back to the energy piece here for a second. You know, one of the issues that I see is it almost feels like we have been led to believe that as an American, we have to get our oil from the Middle East. And if you look at where we get a bulk of our oil from, number one is Canada, number two is Mexico, and now all of a sudden it's shifting to we're almost sustainable here for our own within our own borders. And if that's the case, A, why don't more Americans know that? And B, why the heck do we care what goes on in the Middle East then if we're not really relying on them for oil?
We got to get our eye off the Middle East. The Middle East is the past. It's not the future. The future is Asia, Eastern Asia. And, you know, and I think energy is the key to it's the master resource in the production of all of our goods and services, including food. Mexico has recently woken up and has decided to start privatizing its mm-hmm. energy markets in terms of discovery and production. And, you know, that's the wave of the future. They, you know, for decades, their energy production shrank, and they went from an exporting country almost to an importing country, and that's just not the right way to go about doing things. But in terms of the Middle East, we've got to get our eye off of there and our dependence and our focus out of the Middle East and place it elsewhere, which is the future, really. Is East Asia. Mm-hmm. That's where economic growth is going to be generating for decades to come.
You know, and it's interesting because for as long as I can remember, it always seems to be that the major turmoil, the major problems and global issues seem to be happening with the Middle East. And it needs to come to an end. And I think oil is a big factor in that. Our guest today is Dr. Mark Thornton. We've got John O'Donnell in studio. My name is Merlin Rothfeld. When we come back, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into these seven major trends facing the market. John talked about the energy renaissance and manufacturing renaissance as well. We'll look at a few more here when we come back after a short break. We've got Dr. Mark Thornton with us. He's helping us break down some of the current trends going on. John, you got seven of them that are burning a hole in the paper over there.
Well, let's talk about the manufacturing renaissance, about jobs. If everything's going to go to robotics and we're going to have all these wonderful plants and we're going to have these plants run with cheap energy, we still got the issue of jobs. It seems to me that the jobs are not going to be in the assembly or manufacture. It's going to be in the maintenance of learning how to service and maintain these robots. And by the way, there aren't many people in the United States that have that expertise. So where are the jobs going to come from if we do have a renaissance in manufacturing, Mark, and everything goes to robotics?
Well, there's going to be a whole slew of jobs involved in making the robots themselves. Mm-hmm. Redesigning and revamping assembly lines is going to require, you know, programming. It's going to require hardware, and it's going to require, you know, all of those jobs are going to be not just one-off type of jobs. There'll be a continuous process, just as there isn't any manufacturing process whereby you're going to have to continually update and upgrade those facilities. But a large part of the jobs of the future are going to be in service areas in the economy, entertainment areas in the economy, the whole knowledge industry, the whole information industry. Those were those are where the jobs are coming from right now, and we expect that trend to continue far into the future.
Well, the other thing along those lines, of course, is those are all knowledge workers, and but those are very important jobs. Let's go to Renaissance number three, which is close to Power Trading Radio and Mises Institute, which is the revolution in education, where you came out of a traditional academic environment. Most PhDs in economics, you know, lean toward working in academia. But we're starting to see teaching over the web. We're starting to see Khan Academy-type models where we flip the classroom and the role of education. We've done this here at Online Trading Academy. I know that Mises.org has done it with the Mises Academy. What do you see for the future of education in the private sector specifically?
Well, I think Online Trading Academy is the wave of the future, whereby individuals, you know, basically select the type of education that they want, and they can access that through both human contact as well as online. I think that flexibility and that ability to cater to individual needs is going to be the wave of the future. You mentioned Khan Academy, all the online resources that are available. That's what we do here at the Mises Institute is, you know, we're an educational institute, and by far and away, the most educating that we do is online through our website, Mises.org, and through our Mises Academy. That's the wave of the future. And as I told John before, we're offering basically our entire Mises Academy to date available to your members for $99 a year, so that you can access every single course that's been presented on Mises Academy for $99. And, of course, the courses themselves were originally more than $99 and as recently down to as little as $59 per course.
Yeah.
But this gives you more than 50 courses. It gives you three courses as foundations in economics. It gives you four introductory courses in economics. It gives you advanced courses in Austrian microeconomics and macroeconomics, as well as my course on there was called Bubbles, Booms, and Busts.
Mm-hmm.
And basically those are my, you know, leading lectures about how to use macroeconomics from the Austrian school to understand markets. And so we have everything from, you know, the very foundational elements all the way up to advanced topics as well as special topics like the economics of the Great Depression, economics of Obamacare, mm-hmm. anatomy of the Fed, adventures in energy economics. So we touch on all sorts of things in the Mises Academy taught by some of our leading Austrian scholars, and it's all for $99. I can't imagine a better deal than that, because it's you're concentrating the information, you're honing the information of the top scholars and trying to bring it across to everyday ordinary people. It's outstanding. I think everybody should check it out.
No, we do. We just scratched the surface here on the show. For those of you who want much more in-depth you know, topics, these guys do put out some amazing work. You can go to academy.mises.org. TJ had the website up there for a second. You see some pretty famous names out there. Robert Murphy, Joseph Salerno, David Gordon, Thomas DiLorenzo, and just a list of tons of different topics. I believe 100% that knowledge is power. That's kind of the backbone here with Online Trading Academy, is understanding from the financial perspective how to take control of your financial future. And I think that these courses here will certainly help increase your knowledge of how these markets work and how we can position ourselves in it.
You know, I'm a believer in what Mises Academy is doing, what Online Trading Academy is doing, are perfect examples of how the private sector, on a for-profit basis, can take over an education space and what could create another renaissance in America, which could be as big as the energy boom or the manufacturing boom we talked about earlier, would be to abolish the Department of Education, totally privatize and incentivize and put competition into the education space. And I think we could really turn this country around quickly and build our new future through the private education space. Don't you think so, Mark?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. Public education is what's been holding this country back, and it's been keeping it ignorant of the realities of everyday life as well as, you know, macroeconomics and national politics. But public education, you know, was morphed on the back of private education. But now you're talking about a century of public education, you know, not having any incentives, mm-hmm. not having any information gathering processes.
That no are competition.
No competition. Yeah. And now it's got competition. I think it's scared, John. I think it's really scared.
As it should be. As it should be. Let's just take a quick break. We are discussing kind of the seven major trends going on out there. We talked about energy renaissance and manufacturing renaissance and just touching the education kind of revolution that's going on right now. A lot of people seeking education to empower themselves, to have a better life, whether that's new employment or just a greater understanding of how things really work, because traditional academia doesn't really teach you the way that things really work. My name is Merlin Roth. We've got John O'Donnell here in studio. We got Dr. Mark Thornton all the way down south, and he's coming to us from Alabama. He is giving us some insights into kind of the seven, John, you're calling them revolutionary changes, but what are what's
megatrends?
The
these are megatrends.
Megatrends. Sounds like a Transformers movie.
These are real megatrends, though. Let's talk about number four here, Mark, which is the transformation of retail. We seem to be moving away from the brick and mortar. Retail box into online. Not only is Amazon knocking the ball out of the park, mm-hmm. but take a look at those numbers in Alibaba. They now have more revenue than eBay and Amazon combined.
Well, I mean, that's where we see it most visibly is Amazon, you know, where I can go on Amazon and have scheduled deliveries of the products I regularly buy and add, you know, other products to that, get extra discounts, get delivery free with the Prime and all this kind of stuff. That is hitting the American economy in a big way, really transforming retail. But it's also, I mean, this retail revolution has been going on a long time inside the brick and mortar places. I mean, think of the world before barcodes, yeah. you know, when stores had to go around sure. and take inventory by hand on a regular basis and, you know, by hand send in sheets where you were ordering particular items. That no longer is the case. With barcodes, every establishment knows its inventory, you know, in live time. And that's the reason you have bigger operations, bigger grocery stores, bigger department stores, bigger hardware stores. And they can carry more products. They don't have to carry as many of them. They don't have to buy as many of one particular item. So you get more choice, more sizes, more brands. And so, you know, that just leads to more competition and greater consumer satisfaction. So it's not just outside the brick and mortar. We've got a lot of inside brick and mortar that, you know, is monitoring what you're buying. I know a lot of people hate that, but they're going to be able to better customize what they're selling to you and advertising to you and putting on sale to you because of all this information technology gathering.
Well, you know, Mises talked about the customer being king, the consumer being king, and he's the tail that wags the dog. At the end of the day, it ripples through the whole supply chain, all the way from just-in-time inventory, intermodal transfer, the ability to source globally goods and services. And at the end of the day, the consumer's winning. Yes, there's some intermediation going on in the labor market, but that gives those retail people the opportunity to adapt. Let's talk about another mega trend here that I think is important, which is the development of the Central Corridor, the atrophy of other parts of the country, and because of cheap energy, manufacturing moving back to the heartland. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I think it's, you know, that's a great development. I think that the interior parts of the United States are doing much better right now, and a good part of that is the energy issue. But if you look at the map in terms of unemployment, the rate of unemployment in the central core of the United States is about normal, and through that area of North to South Dakota into Texas, mm-hmm. the unemployment rates are actually below the long-term average, and the rates of unemployment are higher on the East and West Coast. So, yes, I think that, you know, manufacturers are coming back to the United States. We've had, you know, one of the advantages of the low, stable wage rates that we've seen in this country is that there's plenty of available low-cost manufacturing labor that's available. And we've seen this come here in Alabama. We have the Kia plant, we have the Hyundai plant, and we have all of the parts manufacturers and warehouses in between. So there's this little Detroit-like corridor that runs from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, through Montgomery, and even over into Mississippi, and then on in over into Georgia. Yeah. And so through central Alabama and then into Mississippi and Georgia, we have our own little automotive corridor that's emerged in the last 25 years and now is very strong.
Absolutely. It's interesting because not only are we getting the better unemployment rates, but we're also seeing migrations of people moving out of other states to the central corridor. John has seven things here. We've already talked about the energy renaissance, which I think rightfully so was the number one on this list. We also talked about manufacturing, which I think it may not be as mainstream, but we're definitely starting to see some changes. Education, which for myself, I've been a fan of this education revolution for a long time, which is why I aligned myself with
Well, we're a pioneer in it.
Absolutely.
As is Mises Academy, by the way.
Transformation of retail, which we are seeing some changes. Even a quad rotor proposal from Amazon to deliver things to your door within 15 minutes of purchase. That would be pretty cool to see. Development of the central corridor. And now, John, what's our sixth?
All right. Number six, Mark, is the dominance of U.S. financial markets. With what's going on in Western Europe, they've got a real basket case over there. With what's going on with that Japan economy that Merle and I call a bug in search of a windshield economy and their aging demographics, I think there is a great opportunity that America, the U.S. dollar, is the flight to safety trade. And if we're going to have some economic crisis, our capital markets are deep enough and broad enough to accept the world's capital, and we're going to see a lot of capital flow to America. What do you think?
Well, yeah, as concerned as I am with U.S. financial markets, when you look around the world, we're still...
We're the prettiest girl in the ugly girl contest.
That's right. And so, you know, I have probably higher...
We're the slowest horse to the glue factory. Come on, let's go.
Jeez, John.
But I think we are in good shape there as long as the U.S. dollar holds out. As long as U.S. Military power holds out, and as long, I think we've done a lot to damage our image as a country in the last few years, and I think if we could solve some of those problems, we would be in a really good position. And of course, our financial markets do dominate the world. The dollar still does dominate the world, and we're not up against that much in the way of competition right now because of all the great uncertainty and all the other leading economic powers around the globe. And I would include China in that because of the massive financial imbalances and their political situation.
Yeah. You know, I find it interesting. I saw a report today, I think I sent you a copy of it, that 56% of the people in China in an independent poll believe that there is going to be a war between China and Japan. And about 29% of the people in Japan believe that's a possibility. That could really throw a monkey wrench into the capital markets. And again, if something like that were to happen, or if Russia were to get more frisky in Eastern Europe, where do you put your money? I mean, if you're looking for capital safety, we got our problems, but we're a safe haven. I don't care how you slice and dice it.
Well, I think if there's something that's that bad, you would have to consider even going into gold or something like that. But the dollar would, of course, be a safe haven. I don't look for war between Japan and China. I think that there's always tension between those two nations, and they have been at war with themselves in the past, going back many, many centuries. And so obviously that's on their mind because that's their historical experience.
And Mark, let's talk about megatrend number seven. How can we not have a discussion on the accelerating advancement in technology touching all segments of our society, from healthcare to education to, I mean, it just goes on and on and on, the economic disruption, the creative destruction and new applications that are coming. It's mind-numbing what we're seeing in the acceleration and change in technology.
Well, every year, automobiles that come out, they have new technological advances that make the automobile more and more like a robot that you program and tell it what to do, and then it does it. And so, you know, every year there's technological improvements. Every year there's new things that go into technology in our houses.
Healthcare.
You know, and in healthcare, of course, as well, I think you're going to see a revolution in healthcare where it's not going to be the go to the doctor, go to the hospital model, but it's going to be technologically driven so that you're pretty much aware of your health and you're pretty much aware of abnormal things in your health, you know, maybe is simply looking in a mirror and having the machine scan you and you know, alert you to any abnormalities. And so I think healthcare is definitely going to be revolutionized. The home is going to be revolutionized. You know, now they have a way to air condition our homes without ductwork. And so there's all sorts of new changes that are going to affect us in our daily lives, really. I think, you know, that's the thing about computers is they're, and technology is that their influence in our lives, perpetually integrates itself into our lives and becomes, you know, just a normal part of it. Look at the iPhone and what it's able to do. I mean, one iPhone basically outserves the individual compared to an entire economy, what it used to do in the past, and puts all that information and all that technology to work for us on, in our daily lives. It's truly amazing, and every year, if not every day, we see advancements and improvements in areas of the economy which are completely untouched by government regulation. The production and distribution of apps on iPhones is completely beyond the reach of government intervention and regulation.
Yeah. Well, you know, Merlin and I have experienced this in the online trading space. When we got into this business, commissions were $65 a trade. Today, commissions run you $5 a trade. Or we saw spreads go from a $20 bid to $21 offered to $20 bid, 20 and a penny offered. We saw tremendous efficiency in the flatter, fair capital markets because of technology. And it all brings in a better opportunity for the consumer, for the investor, you know, people. And that was all done by the private sector. I mean, we're not talking about a massive government interference making this happen.
That's right. When you see spreads get closer and closer, when you see commissions and fees get smaller and smaller, what you're seeing is the result of free market competition at work. And, you know, the fact that you can make stock trades when you're watching a junior league soccer game, you know, from your iPhone is just another example of how competition and markets and technology are making our lives better. And it's not like people are losing money on these apps or they're, you know, these stock trading companies are losing money. They're still doing very, very well. But, it, you know, it's the fact that competition has forced us into being more efficient and is forcing us to try to serve the consumer better at a lower cost.
Absolutely. You know, and if you guys, there's a bunch of articles that Mark has written, a lot of very current topics that tie into these seven things that we just addressed here. If you'd like more information, go to Mises.org. You can also go to academy.mises.org. You can get part, become part of their course curriculum over there. They've got 50 courses, $99 for a year, some just phenomenal content out there. Dr. Mark Dorton was our guest today. Thank you so much for coming on the program. We appreciate it and look forward to having you on again soon.
Thank you, Merlin. Thank you, John.